Senate will come to order. Messages from the House.
February the 26th, 2010, from the House of Representatives. Third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 3, Apiary Laws, Ayes 56, Excuse 2. Senate File 4, Special Districts Elections, 58, Ayes 58, Excuse 2. Senate File 5, Special District Public Records, Ayes 58, Excuse 2. Senate File 8, Medical Support of Children, Ayes 56, Noes 2, Excuse 2. Senate File 26, Eligibility Concealed Weapons Permit, Ayes 56, Noes 2, Excuse 2. Senate File 43, Game and Fish Special Hunting Season Extension, Ayes 57, Noes 1, Excuse 2. Senate File 51, Official State Code, Ayes 56, Noes 2, Excuse 2. Senate File 63, Irrigation Districts Assessments, Ayes 58, Excused 2. Senate File 9, Juvenile Detention Facility Standards, Ayes 58, Excused 2. Senate File 16, Property Tax Review of Assessments, Ayes 58, Excused 2. And Senate File 19, DUI Impairment Period and Period of Enhanced Penalties, Ayes 56, Noes 5, Excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 26th, 2010, from the House of Representatives. Concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 72, Wyoming Retirement Plan Contributions 2. The Senate file listed above was passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 21, excuse 2.
37.
Ayes 37, noes 21, excuse 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Senate File 28, State Loan and Investment Board Refinancing. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 47, noes 11, excuse 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Senate File 12, State Parks and Historic Sites, Boundaries and Designations. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excuse 2. Senate File 11, State Park Acquisition and Disposition of Lands. The Senate file passed above, passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, noes 2, excuse 2. Senate File 10, State Parks, Bear River State Park. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, excuse 2. Senate File 47, Paramutual Wagering Simulcasting. The file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 52, noes 6, excuse 2. The House respectfully asks that the Senate do concur by adopting the listed amendments.
That order of business of more reports. Reports from standing committees.
February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 89 engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Fladern, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman.
Are we ready for concurrences, unfinished business? Senator Schiffer, are you ready for message number 211, concurrence? Okay, go ahead. Oh, reading clerk,
we got it.
Please read in the message.
February 26, 2010, from the House of Representatives, message 211, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 47, paramutual wagering simulcasting. Senate file listed above, passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 52, no 6, excused 2. The House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I'd move message number 211, the concurrence report on Senate File 47, parimutuel wagering simulcasting. Mr. President, I'm going to ask the Senate to vote aye, that we do concur with the House action. What the House did, they specified we could have parimutuel on actual live horse racing. For some of you who recall, when we went the other way for a brief amount of time, but it's live horse racing or parimutuel event days required to qualify for simulcasting permits. That gets done exactly what the bill was intended to do. The House went on, and I think this is a good portion to their amendment. They added the sentence, the commission shall adopt rules governing establishment of live horse racing or parimutuel event days required for simulcasting permit in a manner that ensures fair and equitable involvement of all affected parties, including consideration of the economic viability of those days to permit applicants. I think that's a good amendment. I think it strengthens the bill. I think it gives those folks an incentive to get together and still preserves the role of the commission in regulating that industry. At one point they had added some requirements in on the definition for a horsemen's association. Wisely, they took those back out. I think they helped the bill. I think we should concur, and I'm going to ask you to vote aye.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate file number 47, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert? Honeycutt,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Meyer-S, Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
no.
Sessions, Townsend,
aye.
Von Fladern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 47. Senator Burns, are you ready on message number 200?
Mr. President, I've just been told that I am.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 26th, 2010, from the House of Representatives, message 200, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 10, State Parks, Bear River State Park. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move concurrence on message 200, Senate file 10, and I ask the body to vote aye. Mr. President, as you recall, Senate file 10 dealt with the Bear River State Park, and it just had to do with the land transfer between the two. And the amendment that the House put on there was simply grammatical and to no effect in the bill, and actually the bill reads a little smoother now. So I'd ask the body to vote aye.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate file 10, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Meyer-S.
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate file number 10. Message number 201. Senator Burns, are you ready?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 26th, 2010, from the House of Representatives. Message number 201, concurrence requested. Mr. President. Senate File 11, State Parks Acquisition and Disposition of Lands. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move concurrence on message number 201, Senate File 11, State Parks Acquisition and Disposition of Lands. Mr. President, as you recall, this particular bill dealt with the concept of giving the Department of State Parks the authority to acquire or get rid of de minimis pieces of property, which would be 5 acres or less. There was some concern expressed in this body over the idea of giving them that authority, especially in acquiring land. That same concern was expressed over at the other end of the Capitol, especially over the concept of adding public land to the rosters in Wyoming. So they passed an amendment that took out their power of acquisition. It kept the authority to get rid of some of these monuments and so forth, and if the body recalls, I had passed out the list of all these various historic sites of questionable value within the state. This bill would still allow them to get rid of those particular properties, but it does not allow them without the permission of the legislature to acquire any additional property. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to entertain any questions. Otherwise, I would urge an aye vote.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 11. And you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Meyer-S?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
No.
Von Platern?
Aye.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing? Geis, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing? Vote closed. 23 ayes, 7 noes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 11. Message 202. Senator Burns, are you ready?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 26th, 2010, from the House of Representatives. Message number 202, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 12, State Parks and Historic Sites, Boundaries and Designations. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move concurrence on message 202, Senate File 12, and ask the body to vote aye. Mr. President, if you recall, this particular bill, there were no real policy questions on this bill. All this bill really did was along the lines of cleanup. It standardizes the descriptions of the various state parks and historic sites. Some right now have legal descriptions that are listed in statute. Some aren't. And a number of these legal descriptions are inaccurate anyway. What this bill basically does is will list all the state parks and historic sites, just list them, and then the legal descriptions are kept in rules within the Department of State Parks and Cultural Resources. Mr. President, the amendment that the House put on is actually just cleanup. It fixes up some of the titles. For instance, on page 8, line 22, it gets rid of the word old because the word old was never in there. The Old South Pass City. It's never been called Old South Pass City. So that's just cleanup. Mr. Chairman, the other thing that it cleans up is it gets rid of in the bill where it says state-owned, because not all the state parks and historic sites we have are on property that's actually owned by the state. And in a number of cases, state parks are leased from someone else. A good example is Kurt Gowdy State Park. That's actually leased from the city of Cheyenne. So as I said, Mr. President, this is just cleanup, and I ask the body to vote aye.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File number 12, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk would call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Why would he vote no?
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Meyer-S?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
By your vote, you had have concurred on Senate File 12. Senator Martin, are you ready on message 210?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 26, 2010, from the House of Representatives. Message number 210, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 28, State Loan and Investment Board Loan Refinancing. Senate file listed above, passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 47, noes 11, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benson, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move concurrence on message 210 and urge you to vote aye. Mr. President, this is on Senate File 28, State Loan and Investment Board Loan Refinancing. The House Committee, as they work this bill on page 2, they deleted language on page 2, line 3, starting with including, and it's deleted, including the cost of having the abstract brought down to date. The testimony from the Office of State Lands and Investment was that they don't use abstracts any longer. They use title insurance, and the language down to date, nobody was sure what that meant. This whole subsection is actually the same language that was used on farm loans, and LSO just brought that language over. With that, they decided that that was not needed, and the Office of State Lands and Investment concurred. So with that, Mr. President, I would ask for an aye vote.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 28. You've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Elliott.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson. Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Meyer S, Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Bonflatern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File number 28. Message number 212. Senator Nicholas, are you ready?
Mr. President, you know, I was ready, but we just discovered a change in there that we're not sure. If we withdraw, we'll check with retirement to make sure we're not making a mistake there.
Okay, thank you. Didn't have any more committee reports. Okay, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, considerations of bills and general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just kind of a heads up to the body. We have to be in and out of the committee of the whole this afternoon in order to get the necessary bills ready and out of committee, get necessary reports. So we'll be hopping in and hopping out. And with that, Mr. President, I would move that the Senate resolve itself back into the committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, the Senate Appropriations Committee will meet up in S-14 to consider re-referral House Bill 11, the Cancer Control Act Amendment. I think that's all the re-referrals, folks. So if you had a re-referral that didn't get to us.
Senator Larson.
Mr.
Mr. President, we just concluded our meeting. We have three re-referrals, which should be able to be reread in a few minutes.
Okay,
but
we'll pull our desk.
Senator Ron Quayton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Play music and chairs. Yeah, we'll be back and forth. Oh, that's good. Chief Clerk, do you have the bills?
Committee of the Whole will come to order. Our first bill for consideration is House Bill 60. Will a reader please read it in?
House Bill 60, sponsored by Representative Pedersen. UPMIFA expenditure limitation, an act relating to the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act. It was assigned to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the do pass recommendation on House Bill 60, and to present this on the floor, I'd like to call on Senator Rice.
Senator Rice. You did that on purpose, didn't you? Members of the Senate, bring to you easier way to say it with regard to expenditure limitation. Last year, ladies and gentlemen, the legislature passed MIFA, which is the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act. And this, so far, there's been 47 states that have adopted this uniform act. It's a uniform law that comes through our uniform law commissioners. And what happened last year was that in the late days of the session, we changed the presumption with regard to imprudence from 7%. Down to 5%, and in so doing, we really constricted our charitable organizations and foundations in the way in which they can operate, or, quite frankly, even want to serve as a board member for fear of liability when you're talking about a presumption of imprudence. Now, UPMIFA establishes two general principles for charitable endowments. The first is that the assets are to be invested prudently, and in so doing, you use diversified investments, and you try to grow the fund. The second component of that is that the appreciation of those assets can be prudently spent for the purposes of the endowment fund. And so, when we went to the 5%, most states, if they have a presumption of imprudence, have 7%. And that's the way the bill was last year. Many states, about half of them, don't even have this presumption of imprudence. So as a result, what you get into is a situation where particularly in these economic times, where when a charitable organization or a foundation is attempting to use the money for the purpose for which it was designed, they're bumping into issues concerning fees, and points or basis points or whatever else that is may conflict with their ability to use the money when they spend it. And if a charitable organization has a policy of, say, paying out 4.75% and has negotiated management fees or basis point of 50 points or somewhere in that neighborhood, that would total almost 5.25%, and you already have a presumption of imprudence then. So What this bill does is simply return the presumption back to the 7%, just as other states are. I want to be clear that this presumption does not mean that the foundations are required to raise their payout policies or not. Quite to the contrary, they can continue to do what they're doing and do it conservatively. Payouts remain an internal decision, and in fact, some IRS guidelines are out there with regards to private funds that say they must pay out 5%. So, an example that we have that the former president of this Senate gave to me is a pretty good example. In the paper yesterday, we had this example of our animal shelter here in Cheyenne. And they have an endowment, and it's $1 million endowment. Well, with the Financial Times as they are right now, the city of Cheyenne cut their contract to $56,000. So if the endowment wishes to make up that fund, make up that, and use that money, right now 5% would be $50,000, and they're afraid they couldn't use that money, that it would be imprudent, a presumed imprudence in the current statute. So I urge your favorable consideration. I think we were trying to be conservative last year, and we still always are conservative, but I think it went a little too far, and it really hamstrings our foundations and charitable organizations. I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Further discussion, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make sure, I think I know, but the sponsor might be able to tell me so I know for certain, that we're actually talking about the organization spending the corpus. That they can spend up to 5% of the corpus as the law is now, and when we change it, they can spend up to 7% of the corpus. Am I reading that right?
Further discussion? Senator Ross?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I mean, these funds do generate interest, and if the interest is not spent, it becomes part of the corpus. So, I assume that, I mean, they don't have to just spend interest, but more often than not, they probably would.
Further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I recall when we brought this bill forward was that it was because of the tough times and that endowment funds were actually in the negative and that they were losing money. In fact, you know, many funds did during this downturn in the market. But there was still the obligation to feed the dogs and keep the kettles clean. And so, but they couldn't dip into the corpus in any manner, way, shape, and form. And so we came up with 5% a year that you could dip into the corpus and pay your bills while you're in a negative return flow situation. And now it looks like we're going to 7%. And what I recall was the 5% was deemed to be prudent from our perspective, because if you had 20 years of negative return flow, at least the endowment would stay alive for 20 years at 5%. And now you're going to be digging into it at 7%. But you can spend all your interest. You can spend 100% of your interest and 100% of your income and 100% of your capital gains. But you can only spend 5% of your fair market value of the endowment fund. So now we can spend 7% of the fair market value of the endowment fund.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, with respect to this, remember, folks, if you set up a trust and you do not want to have any part of the corpus invaded, you simply specify and then no part of the corpus can be invaded. There are some accounts that there are some accounts out there that you cannot invade the corpus. With respect to those types of trusts that were set up without any specific instruction, then we're saying that when the investment earnings reach zero and you're down to what would be the corpus value. That's not the fair market value. I mean, it is the fair market value of the corpus, but it's a corpus of the amount, original amount donated. So if you set up, for example, a trust at the University of Wyoming to have a scholarship for kids to go to engineering school, and you wanted two scholarships per year, and because of investment earnings, the value of the trust, the stock dropped below what was the original investment amount. So you gave $100,000, it now hits $95,000. It is presumed that the donor didn't want scholarships just to stop. Rather, what it says is you can now invade its, your, unless there's some other instruction, there's a presumption of prudence as long as you don't invade that $95,000 by more than 7%, that it's a prudent investment decision. So the assumption is that the donor would still want those two scholarships to be issued and paid out of the corpus, and presumably the stock market comes back, that same corpus jumps up to $130,000, so as long as you're properly invested in equities, you're okay. The equities are going to go up and down, and at some point may go below the original donated corpus value, but in all likelihood will jump back up. You're right, the 7% will deplete more quickly, but the 7% was the default by the National Conference on Uniform State Laws. We were more conservative, 5%. This just takes it back to the NACUSL recommendation.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The questions are right on. Yes, you can spend more of the corpus. There's no doubt about that. But if you establish a fund to perform a service, and the dog feeding example is a perfect example, if the city says all of a sudden we're going to charge you more than that, the people who contribute and the people who establish that obviously want the dogs to continue to be there. But in these days of 1% or less interest, investments going down, the interest income isn't enough in that fund to meet the desire and purpose of the reason that trust was established. And so they do have to be able to spend higher. And if the 5% isn't enough, they still have a desire to meet that obligation. Now, you can control any of these by just putting stipulations in when it's formed. You can have it, can't spend any of the original money. But it allows a person who is going to be on some of these boards and make some of these expenditures to be able to meet the needs of what the trust was created for or the foundation created for without being in presumptive violation of what the conditions are. And in times when the interest and so on goes up, why, maybe it won't be necessary. But the goal of setting these up is to meet a specific purpose, basically. That's what you're trying to do. Scholarship was a perfect example. Feeding the dogs is a perfect example. And it is the belief mostly that the people who set these up and the groups want that purpose met first and foremost. Yes, it will cut down. It will cut down on the number of years that lasts. But I would submit to you, in good years when the economy changes, that's going to go up higher, and they don't need to spend anywhere near that much, and so that can be reinvested, much like our state funds.
Any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 60, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 60 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 93. Would the clerk please read it in?
House Bill 93, sponsored by Representative Throne, OSHA Penalties, an act relating to the Wyoming Occupational Health and Safety Act. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. No, Senators Bebout and Cooper. Senator Larson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move House Bill 93 for a due pass. When the Committee of the Whole rises and reports that they give it a favorable recommendation, that further reading be dispensed with. And, Mr. Chairman, once again, to present this bill on the floor, I would call on Senator Ross.
Senator Ross. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 93 is OSHA penalties. This bill came out of the governor's task force on workplace safety. It was in conjunction also with what was going on in the Joint Judiciary Committee in the interim. As you recall, during the interim, Joint Judiciary was considering a legal concept called duty of care. That bill failed. But as part of that effort, one of the things that was kind of a byproduct of that was the governor's task force on workforce safety and workplace safety. And that task force met five times during this interim, this last interim. And interestingly enough, we were able to convince NIOSH, which is the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, to come in and assist us in workplace safety issues in Wyoming. NIOSH was very successful in reducing workplace fatalities in the state of Alaska. And we had two medical doctors, both of whom were occupational epidemiologists, come in also to gather and analyze the data in Wyoming. And quite frankly, folks, Wyoming has a workplace fatality rate that is four times the national average. And so as a result, there were certain things that were recommended that came out of the task force. One of them being seatbelt violations and restrictions, and that's Senate File 64. And one of the recommendations that came out of another working group was these OSHA fines and assessments, which you see here in House Bill 93. The committee, the Workplace Task Force, analyzed data from Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Wyoming Department of Employment, Workers' Comp, the Department of Health, YDOT crash files, and OSHA files. As the working group got going and doing its business, it became so large. I have about five pages, or even more than that, six pages of different entities and people that were involved in the working group. And it was divided up into subcommittees. And out of the oil and gas subcommittee came what you have here now, House Bill 93, which is an increase in the OSHA penalties. Now, what does this pertain to? OSHA does not have jurisdiction over authorities involving railroads, mines, transportation, i.e. public highways, airlines, or agricultural operations involving fewer than 11 employees. So, the first part of the bill, 2711-107B, deals with, these are all current statutes, the willful and knowingly violations of the current statute, and bumps up the penalties, and you can see those on lines 3 through 15 on page 2. Paragraph C on page 2 is for serious violations. Violations specifically determined to be of serious nature, and you see the penalties then over on the bottom of page 20, or line, page 2, line 24 through line 7 on page 3. Paragraph D is for the not to be of a serious nature kind of violations.
And so we have bumped those up. This bill currently mirrors H.R. 2067, which is a bill that is currently before Congress, and mirrors their language. Of course, you never know what's going to happen in Washington, but this is our attempt to follow that. And also, I don't really care what the feds do. We need to take care of our workplace fatalities, and we need to do what we can do to reduce those kinds of things. The testimony that I heard in committee was that with regards to OSHA and this, Wyoming needs not only a hammer or a penalty, but also needs a glove in which to work with industry. They've agreed to do and to increase their courtesy inspections through their consultation program. I will tell you that also speaking in favor of the bill were the contractors, the Association of Builders, PAW, Petroleum Association, and it appears from the, although I did not and was not able to attend these task force meetings, that there is consensus that raising the OSHA penalties is prudent, it is evidence-based, and will hopefully have the desired effect of reducing workplace fatalities. I urge your favorable consideration.
Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, the Management Council last year assigned to the Labor Committee the task in the interim of dealing with this task force, responding to them, bringing any legislation. They brought this particular piece of suggestion to the committee meeting we had in December, our last committee meeting. There was no time to prepare a bill. And same thing with seatbelt bill. Now, I brought the seatbelt bill directly. That one was a very clear recommendation and ready. It was my feeling at the time, after listening to the presentation from the governor's task force, that this particular issue had not been adequately thought out and that there was not any clear understanding of why increasing the penalties was going to improve workplace safety. And I would want to see that before endorsing this particular piece of legislation. Now, there's two pieces to this. One, some enhanced penalties when violation of a safety rule causes the death of an employee. That's a separate issue. You have to prove causation. That's, I think, a different issue. But then you've got this general penalty on starting page one, going over page two. You're raising it civil penalty from 5,000 to 8,000 and no more than 120,000 for each violation. You've got similar increase on page three, it appears to me. And let me tell you some of the area of my concern. I was on management audit quite a number of years ago. We looked into the OSHA program. And what we found at that point was that it appeared that OSHA made no difference at all in the workplace safety rate when they were enforcing a set of regulations that had been prescribed by Washington and imposed on us. They did make a difference when they were enforcing a set of regulations as they did, and I think it was the petroleum drilling industry, a set of regulations that they had developed locally. Now, that's long enough ago, so I don't know what their current regulatory scheme is and how successful it is. But the history of OSHA was they made some classic regulatory mistakes and went out and tried to enforce very detailed recommendations from certain engineering associations that, frankly, they didn't concentrate on the things that were important, and you could get nailed for some just trivial things and some paperwork offenses. And the real things that cause the safety hazard, you wouldn't get nailed for. And maybe they've improved and solved their problems, and maybe they haven't. But I think before we pass any bill that increases the fines that they're going to impose on our businesses and that it brings the heavy hand of government in a greater sense down on our businesses, we need some evidence that imposing those fines is going to actually improve our workplace safety. And just having a program say that it will doesn't strike me as evidence. We have a problem. We need to work on it. I think some of the other recommendations of the task force, the industrial epidemiologist, the seatbelt law, et cetera, will improve our safety. This one, I'm not at all sure that it will. And I think we better look very hard to see what we're doing to our businesses before we enact this legislation.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't know very much about any of this until I had a close friend who told me about what happened to a young man in Orland. And it was her cousin's son. And it was in the beginning of what was going on in the Jonah Field in Pinedale. And he was a kid up there working the summers for to get money to go to college. I went to Governor Friedenthal, our current governor, and I told him. And I said, so what are we going to do about this? I said, the tongs on the rig was put on backwards. And nobody knew what to do. I said, our institutional memory as far as the oil field is gone. I said, that stuff has been piled up in fields for so long that, and they're getting it out of those fields. It's been in there, a lot of them have been in there for 20 years, and they're putting them on those locations up there as fast as they can, and nobody knows how to rig them up and do it correctly. So then I started to research the safety laws we had, and I found an interesting thing. One of the most interesting things to me was in the 70s, we have better safety laws than any surrounding state. In the 70s, our legislature put those safety laws in place. Our legislature did it. But what happened in the meantime was because of this feeling of, you're not going to tell me what to do, we cut the personnel. We kept cutting them year after year until there was nobody there to enforce the safety laws when this stuff started to happen. So there's been a lot of people work together to try to remedy a lot of this. The McMurray Center in Casper, the training centers, all of that kind of stuff. Well, we still keep seeing fatalities. And a lot of it is personal decisions. I'll grant you that. But some of it is not making people do what they should do. So I don't know if you guys, I'm sure many of you have been treated to the lady who wrote the book about my hometown in the oil field and what happened to one young man in that. And it's interesting, we have a member of the Senate here who was one of his teachers when he was young. So what happened after that is we have a thing in the law that says that you can sue the secondary contractor if you have a workplace safety problem, But you can't sue the big boys. They are pretty well insulated under our current laws. The first attempt was made is to take that protection out. And as you probably well know, we couldn't do that. This was what they came to the table with. This is what they cooperated for, I don't know what, a year, 2 years, year and a half. They've met and met. This is what those groups of people, this was not something anybody pulled out of the air. This was what those groups came to the table with and said, let's do this. And we've done some of it, and this is the last piece of it. And they have said, now there are probably individuals in there that don't like it. It's dislike anything. But as a whole, they said to us, do this and preserve our protection for the lawsuits. And so here we are, guys. Now, I can't tell you until this goes in probably 5 or 6 years if people will pay much closer to how in evidence, how they rig up a rig, or if they make a guy wear his safety belt clear up in the middle of a derrick or whatever. Nobody will know that until it goes into place. But people, we have to take some steps to do this. We have to. So that's kind of the history of this. And you probably, I thought I'd just remind you, you probably know it anyway. But in case you'd forgotten, that's how we got to this bill. So thank you.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me bring you a little bit up of what did occur in committee. The testimony in committee was we did not have a statistical summary that was laid out or anything, but that increasing the penalties does force more compliance. One of the goals of this particular piece of legislation, as was told again in committee, is by increasing the fines, the real idea is to get them to bring OSHA in, inspect, and try to prevent accidents in the beginning, not just find people after the fact, which was, I think, happening more in the case that Senator Scott alluded to. I can't tell you whether those statistics are accurate, but that was the testimony within committee. I too, have a little concern about the page 2, line 22, where it says they shall be assessed a penalty. I suggested in committee that it maybe should be changed to may. I'm looking into that. I wasn't prepared to bring it on this particular reading. But, again, we had testimony that just that change could put us out of compliance with the federal act, which is going to come down, that is going to say you will be in compliance, and this is that. I have not been able to determine as yet whether that is a fact or whether it is not, but that was the testimony. And so that's what we had in committee. I can't tell you that it's going to decrease accidents. But the goal was to try to get provide more of incentive to get OSHA to come into your business and look and give you suggestions and ideas of how you can prevent accidents before they happen, not after the fact. And so that's the testimony we had. You can decide, but I may look into the changing the shall to may there, but not yet, because, again, we're going to have to be in compliance. We know that. It's one of those other cussed things that they're sending down from the feds. So I urge you to vote for the bill.
Senator Peabout, do you want your committee of the whole read in amendment at this time? Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
House Bill 93, Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1, page 5 after line 4.
Senator Bebo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to talk about the bill, but we might as well work the Committee of the Whole Amendment. So I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 93. Members of the Senate, if you'll look at House Bill 93 and go to page 5, this is where I would insert the language subtitle K. And the testimony in the committee and the chairman of the committee made a comment about it just before I got up that we want to comply with the federal rules, and I think it's H.R. 2067, and who knows where that may or may not be or what it may say or what it may not say, and And it's not inconsistent for this legislature to put in our statutes when we deal with federal rules and regulations that we comply with them, but whichever is less. And so if we had these penalties in place, obviously, and they came in with less penalties, then this amendment would say we'd be less. But if they go up, then I don't know what we would do other than the bill is already like it is. So the purpose of the committee of the whole amendment, Mr. Chairman, is to say that if, in fact, there is a federal law, House H.R. 2067, and it has changed in Congress, and it comes back with lesser penalties and or provisions like the word shall versus may, that our law would comply with that. And I would ask for your favorable consideration. And then, Mr. Chairman, I will have some questions on the bill.
Okay, we're on the committee of whole number one amendment. Any discussion? Senator Sessions?
Mr. Chairman, I just want you to keep one thing in mind. And why do you think our mining industry is so safe? Why do you think that it's incredible how that very, very dangerous job is so very safe? It's because there are very strict rules, safety measures, inspections, a commitment that those miners are safe, and they are. Think about it, guys. What about, aren't the people in this profession, don't they deserve the same protections that our miners do? So I would ask you to defeat the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. Committee of the Whole Amendment 1, Senator Ross. You look indecisive.
Oh, I'm thinking. On and against the amendment. Folks, I don't know why we always have to tie ourselves at the hip with the feds. Folks, this has been an endeavor not only of the Labor Committee, but the Judiciary Committee and this working group. We need to get serious, folks. We have a real problem in Wyoming, 4 times the national average with regards to workplace fatalities. I mean, the good senator from Laramie County was absolutely correct. Why is it that the mining industry is so safe? It's because of MSHA and their penalties. When you look at their penalties, boy, there's some pretty steep penalties that have been out there, particularly in 2008. So, folks, we need to get real about this. You know, on the one hand, we say, well, let's deal with it in terms of the tort law. And everybody says, oh, no, let's do it. We got this working group on the other side. Let's follow their recommendations. Well, we've got them. They're right here. So I'm urging you to follow that. Otherwise, we do nothing. And by the very same time, people are dying out there. I urge you to defeat the amendment.
On the committee of the whole, one amendment. Further discussion? Further discussion? See, ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt the committee of the whole number one amendment to House Bill 93, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Committee of the Whole number one to House Bill 93 has been defeated. We're back on the bill. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, the most important thing we can do is to prevent any accidents that we can ever do in our working environment. That's absolutely the number one priority. The thing that I have a question about and some concerns is we talk about Wyoming is leading the nation in fatalities, 4 times the national average. The thing that we don't talk about, and I don't hear about, is how many of those fatalities are traffic-related. And I think the state gets a bum rap when we talk about our workplace safety. Now, we all know that a lot of our accidents occur just by the nature of our state. You know, it's in the agriculture business where you're up before, in the dark, you come home in the dark, you're traveling large distances in the where you work 24/7, and a lot of the mineral industries, you're on the road. So I guess my first question is, when we look at that black mark we have against our state, if you look at the traffic side of it, how do we relate, if that's out of there in our workplace, compared to other areas that have a lot of mineral development, they have the same kind of situation that we have, and people traveling a lot of miles, driving a lot in a lot of adverse conditions? That's the first question. And the thing that I think, another thing, when you look at the small employer, and in Wyoming, most of our employers are small. And the large companies have staff, they have safety directors, they have all these things. The small employer does not. What really works for them, if you're trying to prevent accidents, which we all are trying to do, is the courtesy calls and OSHA people coming to their establishments, going to their, whatever it is, where they're working, whether it's on a backhoe, a rig, or whatever, and saying, you know, you ought to do this, this, and this. And it works. And then we do this. I wonder if we now have these large fines, if that's going to in any way, shape, or form take away from that, which I think really stops what we're trying to do, which is save people's lives and save injuries. So I wonder, when you look at the language, what is serious, what is not so serious, that's interpreted by OSHA. So the person out there trying to make a courtesy call and work with you now is going to have to make a decision where it's serious or not so serious. And then the most terrible thing that happens is when you lose a life. That's a terrible thing. I know. I've been there. It's terrible, particularly in small companies where you've known these employees all your life, their friends. Thing. Now that we're putting this language, what does that do to the relationship into these smaller companies? I'm just, you know, if we're really trying to get to the bottom of this, we really need to work on the prevention side. And I'm trying to get a handle on the fines. And because ultimately, if we pass this and it becomes law, I'd love to come back in 3 years and say, now we're ranked, we're not in the worst spot in the country and all that. That's where we want to get to. That's the ultimate goal of this body. And I'm just trying to get a handle on how this works. And the last thing is from a small employer's perspective, and I understand tort, I understand the criminal side, any of that, with the high fines that may be utilized.
Further discussions. Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, folks, I don't think there's anybody on this floor that would be opposed to accidents of any kind, no matter how minor or how serious they are. I was in one of those businesses for several years. It was a very high-risk business, as many of you know. And so I want to get that right out in the open, that I want to tell you I'm not opposed from some of the questions I'd like to ask of the presenter. First of all, I'd like to know, and I haven't seen this anywhere, where did the guidelines come from for these huge increases in these penalties? I mean, these are very, very serious jumps in the penalties. And the other one is, I guess, it was kind of mentioned in something about, and there was something about saying that if they increase their penalties and they reduce accidents and everything. But I asked up in the committee, you know, where's the evidence that there's some correlation somehow between having these huge penalties out and reducing the number of accidents occur? And if there's any correlation between that, I guess, and versus the courteous inspections, and they have really good with small employers or small businesses, I guess I should say, and working with them to reduce these accidents. And these are for a small business person. I mean, you could literally, I guess, put them out of business, and maybe that's what we're trying to do here. I don't know, but it appears to me by the size of these penalties, it wouldn't take much.
Further discussion. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, some of this has already been spoken, but, you know, the last time I checked, it would take OSHA 53 years to go through every workplace in the state of Wyoming. What we need to do is actually add personnel to them, but that's not going to stiffer fines. And the fact is that why does the mines, why does the places that are under MSHA do so much better? Is it because the fines are so much higher? Probably. And you talk about safety in the workplace is something that, you know, I work at a mine. And it's something that's stressed every team meeting, safety discussions, and just it all depends, you know, it's safety is one of the things that we, that is really forefront in our workplace. You know, you take a guard off, you put it back on. But that's, and those are the kind of things, having the kind of programs, the kind of safety attitudes that it takes. Did it take the fines to get it there? I don't know. But I'll tell you what, the MSHA fines are a lot more severe. You know, to have OSHA come to your workplace, there's no teeth in it. Nobody ever takes them seriously because, oh, the state inspectors are there. Well, so what? You know, because there's no real teeth into what they have. Putting some teeth into it, I can tell you when the MSHA inspectors come out to those plants, you know, guys are running around or in the supervisors and everybody's double-checking, making sure that the place is safe. So, you know, I think there is quite a bit to, you know, maybe you should put the fines into getting more personnel so we can get these workplaces inspected once in a while.
Further discussions. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think it's necessarily an either or. I'm very leery of the statute. I've talked with the sponsor numerous times over the interim, and even through this session, we've had a number of long discussions about this very bill, and I approach it very cautiously. I'm doing this, and I'm trying to get behind this bill because for a couple of different reasons. One is we definitely have a problem. Everybody agrees that there's a workplace safety issue in Wyoming. Industry agrees that I attended at least part of the Summit Jobs Conference this summer, the Safety Summit that was held in Cass for the summer for a while. Through the interim, the Judiciary Committee looked at a bill that would actually create a duty of care would enhance the ability of individuals to go through some of the existing immunities, not immunities, but necessarily liability that's out there between to get by a contractor and come in and go after an owner. And so that was repealed in part because we wanted to give the working task force the ability to come and tackle this problem. This is one step. Now, one of the problems I've had is the same issue. It's about the enforcement against the small businessman and how that works. I can't think of anything. And ultimately, the big employers have great safety programs for the most part. I mean, almost all of them have great safety programs. And one of my problems with this has always been, I can't imagine a situation where you have a little father-son outfit and one of them is killed or injured severely by the other. And so now on top of that strategy, we're going to come in and hit them with a fine. I struggle with that. But nevertheless, what I do know is we need to make a change. And this is part of it. And I can share with you that the representations have been made by the task force is that Wyoming OSHA would work to increase our level of enforcement and use these enhanced penalties. But there would also be a commitment from OSHA would be also that this joint and focused approach to outreach and consultation would help build a better working relationship between industry and OSHA. That the task force also feels that a more effective inspection program would help to identify and alleviate some of those major risks. And that the OSHA and workers' compensation program should also work at developing more incentive programs. So this is just one element of the entire work. And ultimately, what the point is not to come in and wait until there's a tragedy and pound you on the head with a fine. The ultimate is that they're supposed to be, and we'll have to take, some of this has to go on faith, and you can decide whether you want to vote this up or down if you think it's not worth relying on them. But the representations are that there'll be an expanded effort by OSHA to work with individuals to alleviate the safety concerns that are in the workplace, to help identify and correct those problems before the tragedies and before the fines are imposed. And so, I mean, you can think about that. It's part of a process that goes through. It's not all going to be solved in this bill, but this is certainly one of the elements and one of the processes that came out of the task force. And so you need to consider carefully, this is how we do stuff. We do stuff piecemeal. We don't typically have a sweeping reform that comes through in one bill. It comes in
bits and pieces, and this is one piece. And you need to decide whether you're behind the entire process or whether you don't think there's a problem and you don't think this is a valid point to come after. You know, that's your vote. But ultimately, it's one of a several that you're going to see over the next few years to determine whether or not we can address and see if we can reduce the workplace injury and fatality rate in Wyoming.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, as to far as whether there's no teeth in this right now, I mean, currently there's a $5,000 fine and a $7,000 fine. Those seem to be pretty big teeth to me. I'm just wondering how many times that dog's bit. How many times have these penalties been used in, say, the last year, last 2 years, last 3 years? I mean, that's a substantial penalty, $5,000 and $7,000. Have we used the teeth that are out there right now?
Further discussion, Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to answer the question from my aisle mate here. We talked about the numbers, and we're at the top of the list and everything. According to the U.S. Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics, out of a three-year period of just oil and gas extraction workers' deaths by injury, there was 404 deaths in this three-year period. 110 of them were highway crash, 88 of them were struck by object, 36 were explosion, 30 were fall to a lower level, 27 fire, 26 caught or compressed in moving machinery or tools, 20 electric current, 18 aircraft crash, and 49 others. So that was nationwide in all of the minerals extraction over 3 years compiled by the government, and there was 404. So that kind of puts a handle on how many deaths that we're really talking about, and that was nationwide.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, further in response to that question, the question was asked, how many of the deaths were transportation? And the figures I've got here are in percentage terms. But in Wyoming, as compiled by our own Department of Employment and the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, for the period 2000 to 2008, so you're covering a fair period, 59.7%, almost 60% of the occupational fatalities in Wyoming were transportation accidents. And furthermore, the better than a majority of those were failure to wear a seatbelt. So that's, you know, there's the number one cause. So we're dealing with the 40% that aren't transportation here. And the concern I have is that I think that we have the potential for, as a result of this task force, greatly improving the workplace safety here in Wyoming. We had testimony from the people who had been involved in the similar effort up in Alaska, where they made a big difference. And their approach was to use an industrial epidemiologist to carefully investigate the accidents, I think both the fatal ones and probably also some of the near misses, and identify what the specific causes of those, go out and pitch the industry groups and the firms, and look, this is where your problem is. Now, let's get together and figure out how to fix it. And the testimony we had was that they were able to do this largely without having to pass new laws and new government interventions. And what I'm a little afraid of is that this bill, with this big increase in penalties, is a reversion to the old punitive approach that OSHA is going to come in as the heavy-handed policeman and see how many people they can nail. And I think that approach is much less likely to be successful than the more cooperative approach where your industrial epidemiologist that they're planning to bring in identifies the specific causes. Really, it's almost by an industry-by-industry basis. Say, what are the real risk factors, and how do we go about putting a stop to them, as opposed to these OSHA regulations, which I'm not sure were developed. It used to be they didn't seem to relate at all to actual workplace safety. I hope they've improved since then. I suspect they have. But I think that's a much more successful approach, and we would be better off to avoid going down the punitive means of getting workplace safety improved. And I'm afraid that's where this bill takes us.
Further discussion. Senator Elliott.
I have a question to ask, because the last statements by the tall senator from Casper confused me a little bit. So I'm going to ask this of the sponsor. My understanding was that NIOSH had done a lot of the work in Alaska on the correcting of their problems. And then in connection with that work, they did consult with epidemiologists, and that they played a role in recommending the higher penalties that were enacted in Alaska. And my question is that a fair statement, summary-wise, of what NIOSH played in terms of its part in this bill?
Further discussion. Further discussion, Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Try to identify, or to at least talk about some of the issues that were raised by the good senator from Fremont County and also then from the mother county. With regard to the penalties, there's a recommendation, as I understand it, and I wasn't on the task force, didn't participate in those meetings, that came from them. It was chaired by Judge Hartman. And I think they were in conjunction with the federal proposed OSHA penalties that are now pending before Congress. So I think that's where it came from. With regard to the traffic, the deaths on the highways and so forth, OSHA doesn't involve itself in those. And the tall senator from Natrona County is absolutely right. There is probably a great need for a state epidemiologist. This bill, though, doesn't change any of the current status with regards to any of that. There's no new employees. There's nothing else like that. It doesn't change tort law. It doesn't change anything other than bump up the penalties. With regards to the word shall, that's already in the statute. That's the way it's operated now. Now, is this going to be something that we're going to see OSHA just going out and running amok? I doubt it. They don't have enough people. That was one of the things we also heard, was probably need to increase their staff for them to be out there, really out there. So this is one little small step along the way. You can decide whether or not it's worth the effort or not, but something, please understand, something has to be done. We cannot put our head in the sand any longer.
Further discussion. Senator Bebop.
Just one last thing, Mr. Chairman, and just in fairness to the OSHA people, and there was a comment that was made, and I took it out of context, because when they show up, nobody pays attention or to what they're doing. These people really do want to help you with your safety. And they come there, and when we've had these courtesy calls, I mean, we have our safety guy, which is a part-time guy because we can't afford a full-time one. They get together and really look at what we do. And they give us recommendations, and we really pay attention to it. So we're glad when they come in. We're glad that they're there trying to improve safety rather than there to try to figure out how to find you. And that there is a difference, and they really are good to work with. And I think the most important thing on their minds, at least the ones we've been with, is a safe workplace.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly, I can't tell you whether increasing penalties works or doesn't work. I don't think you can prove that in any subject. We continue to do it in this body. We increase the penalties for for alcohol, driving, seat belts, almost anything, everything we do. The way to get to it is increase the penalties. I'm not going to guarantee you that's going to work. But the testimony we had in committee and to answer the good senator from the mother county, that was the testimony that we received in committee that you indicated coming from Alaska, and that was one of the things that they did recommend to fix it. So vote up, vote down. But increasing penalties, I don't know. We do it on everything else. Why wouldn't we want to do it here?
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and folks. I've represented during my career, my entire career, entities that are MSHA-related and OSHA-regulated and OSHA-regulated. Part of the reason why MSHA-regulated our clients out there are different is because MSHA spends money to send out compliance officers. They come out three or four times a year, and when they do that, they'll issue lots of citations. If they come back and forth several times, then you get a serious and substantial designation, and that triggers in more enforcement and higher penalties. But if you want to have that level of enforcement in the oil and gas industry, you'd have to get more compliance officers to go out and start educating people. And even on the MSHA side, we know that historically, when they had more resources and they had groups of people that you could call out for advice, they'd come out once a year without any compliance or citation authority and just help you through your safety plans. Those were far more effective. Now, there are a couple of concerns that I have when I look at this. First of all, if you look over on page 2 and you say that the commission may assess a civil penalty not less than $8,000, now you're saying that, one, remember, it's discretionary. It's may. You increase the minimum payment or the fee to $8,000, then all of a sudden they're having to say, does this warrant an $8,000 penalty? If it's if they say, well, I would have been happy to assess $5,000 but not $8,000, it's discretionary, it's not issued. Now, when you get into the death provisions, I've got concerns as well, too, because remember, all of these activities of employer are conducted through employees. And I've had an experience where an MSHA-related company that was went 4 to 5 years without a violation. And on a day that nobody can understand, one of the supervisors, a terrific guy, well-trained, went out and violated the written policy, bypassed an electrical lockout, a triple lockout system. Nobody knows why, nobody how it happened. And unfortunately, it was a fatality resulted in it. Nobody could figure it out. There were citations issued for that, and there should have been. The citations were issued, though, on the account of the employee's conduct violating the employer's policy. That nobody could understand why. So you're going to have, unfortunately in life, you're going to have fatalities that take place because the employee himself violated an employer policy, jeopardized, and nobody understands why, and as I understand it, that's a mandatory penalty. And the employer could have had safety meetings every morning, could have had one that morning. And the employee could have known better. He shouldn't have done it. That happens. And then all of a sudden, if you're a small employer, too, you've got a pretty hefty fine on something that's going to happen. It might only happen once in 20 years. But believe me, if you're in this industry, it will happen at least once or twice where the employees violate the employer's safety procedures. And now, if it's something that the employee is not at fault, the employer provided improper equipment or provided improper locking out devices, fair enough. But there's already provisions to deal with that.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't part of this committee and been listening to this discussion and don't have much background on OSHA, but a couple things do occur to me. In looking at 2711-107 and the notations that come after that, these penalties haven't been updated in nearly 20 years. And so if you just simply put in the inflation over 20 years, you're getting pretty close to what the amounts are at least in the adjusted amounts in parts of this bill. So it's really doing nothing more than putting these penalties pretty much where they were 18 to 20 years ago. The second thing that occurs to me is the wording that's in the existing statutes talking about any employer willfully and knowingly violating this, not employees, but employers, and willingly and knowingly just hanging around attorneys for these last 16 years seems to indicate that that's a pretty high bar. And so an OSHA inspector who's going to go onto a property, if he thinks that he's seeing something that's a willful and a knowing violation, then he's probably going to do something about it. But that's going to be pretty rare. I think most of the time they're going to go in there and just continue to work with the employer because these are pretty high bars and pretty extreme things, and they know that they're going to get lawyers called in on this if they happen to do something about it. And again, just the final thing is, you know, one of the perhaps proudest parts of our history was back in the 19-teens and 20s, 80 to 90 years ago, we went through a series of disastrous mining cave-ins, coal mine cave-ins and explosions throughout the southern part of Wyoming. And the Wyoming legislature at that time, right here on this very floor, responded to that. And they weren't pressured by anyone, but they simply said, those are our people out there who are dying. And they created some of the finest coal mining laws in the United States, to where West Virginia and Ohio and Pennsylvania copied what we did here. You know, and I think that's a tradition we should probably live up to.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none. Question called. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 93, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 93 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 67. With the reading clerk, please read it in.
House Bill 67, sponsored by Representative Illaway, Data Processing Center Sales Use Tax Exemption, and Act Relating to Taxation and Revenue. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. No, Senator Case, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the committee the whole rise to report to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 67, Data Processing Center Sales or Use Tax Exemption. And to carry this good little bill, I'll start down through the sponsors who are going to stand up and carry this dog, I hope. I'll change my motion. I move we come out with an unfavorable recommendation. You want me to carry it?
Yeah.
Okay, I will. Mr. Chairman, this is another subsidy for industry. And I'll go through it very briefly. It's for data processing centers, both big and small. They're scattered all around the state. The driving force for it is one that the people hope to have move in here. Right now, it's you know, they can't even release the name of it's so secret. But anyway, they're supposed to be coming. And I'll walk through it. Data processing services center means a business or business unit which is primarily engaged in providing infrastructure to house a group of network server computers and associated network storage devices in one physical location in order to centralize one or more of the following. And this is what's covered. Storage, management, processing, or dissemination of data and information pertaining to a particular business, taxonomy, or body of knowledge. And it goes on. This is one of those storage center deals. We're all familiar with them, although the ones we've got in the state that came in unsubsidized are much smaller than what's anticipated here. Going over on page 3, the sales price paid for the purchase or rental of computer equipment, including, and then it's all the stuff they use, computer servers, monitors, has to exceed $2 million. That's a relatively low threshold. I think it's a good threshold, quite frankly. They have to be located in the state, and they have to keep the equipment until it's scheduled to be replaced. They'll make an initial capital asset investment of $5 million or not less than $5 million in the 5 years immediately preceding. They have to demonstrate that they've retained, that the purchase of the computer equipment exceeds the annual threshold of $2 million. They, over on page four in the middle, they have to receive certification from the Wyoming Business Council that the purchaser has created or will create a number of jobs in Wyoming that is appropriate to the size and stage of development of the data servicing center. That, in all of this bill, that is the only public benefit there is, that they have to create jobs. It doesn't specify how many jobs, but understand exactly when you're going to be given out somewhere in the neighborhood of a $9 million+ subsidy to these folks. And theoretically, they're going to create jobs and they're going to report them. And that is the public benefit, total. Let's see. We're down on the bottom of page four, that they will keep track of the excise tax on these folks. It's got to meet the annual threshold of $2 million. If they don't meet that threshold, then they got to pay the tax back that they owe. And really, that's a lawyer's dream, but we should at least put it in here. That's kind of a first for these subsidies, that we're requiring these folks, they don't meet the standard, that they're going to have to pay the back taxes. That's a new one. Hopefully they have the financial ability to do that. But understand, I do not consider that a public benefit. They owe the taxes, just like everybody else owes taxes. But if they don't comply, they're going to have to pay the taxes back. We're going to keep written records. I'm over on the top of page five. And according with the Department of Revenue, to show compliance, the purchases and the taxes that would be paid, that's so we can collect them back if they go, if they don't comply with this. They're going to report to the Revenue Committee and to the Department of Revenue, and the Business Council will report annually on this exemption to evaluate the cumulative effects of each exemption that is in effect. We're going to track these guys and see how they're doing. You know, maybe it'll take some tweaking here, but anyway, that's what it is. On 6 and 7, that's mirror language. That's the use tax. We also give them a use tax. When we start getting generous, we get super generous. And this act is effective immediately. Mr. Chairman, that's about the size of the act. Understand what it is. It's a subsidy. We ask other people to pay taxes. We're going to give these folks a subsidy. There are companies that fit this definition already operating within the state that came in with no subsidy, but we're going to give from now on, we're going to encourage them. As I said, it is primarily driven by the efforts of one large company to come into this locality right here where we're at. I think they need it. If they don't, if we don't give them suites like this, these folks will go somewhere else. These are companies that know how to move and know how to locate, and they know how to play games like this. We probably have to give it to them if we're going to recruit them here. Is it right? Is there a public benefit? We'll find out down the road when we start tracking the jobs and whether they're actually doing what they promised us they do. I'd be happy to answer any questions on this bill.
Senator Honeycutt.
Mr. Chairman, I got to rise to defend our bill here. I had to do it yesterday, too, but that's okay. We need to know what's facing us anyway. Ever since fiber optic lines have moved through Wyoming, north and south, east and west, We've been hopeful that it might draw some companies to Wyoming that would use those fiber optic lines. Not much has happened until NCAR showed up. And with NCAR, some of these data centers, which we were hoping would move here, would move to Wyoming. Sorry, I've got to get on the microphone. And at the present time, somebody asked me yesterday about, well, will they just come to Cheyenne, Eastern Laramie County, or part of Albany County? Wherever there's a fiber optic line, they can go. Wherever there's good electricity, reliable, redundant electricity, they can go. What we have to look at right now, and what I said in the committee yesterday was, Wyoming has got a captive product that's been our gold mine, so to speak. It's been our cash cow. It's been the mineral industry. It's buried here. If you want it, you got to pay us to dig it up. These kinds of companies, you have to compete nationally for these kinds of things. And as an economic development, we spent 16 years trying to figure out how to recruit these kinds of companies. And what we found out is you got to have the assets ready and available, because a lot of times they're not looking at Wyoming. They see our advertising and tourism. All they see is horses, cows, open lands, mountains. You don't see a lot of industry and a lot of our tourism promotions and some of our economic development promotions. And then we got the history of Wyoming being the cowboy state. That really hurt us when we were doing economic development, because they didn't think we had anything. Some places even thought we still had outhouses and cowboys and Indians running around. Now, that was far extreme east, but, you know, you got to consider where it's coming from. We have to compete nationally, and this is just one small thing. It's a small subsidy. These companies, these data centers, are made up of just rooms full of computers. Computers wear out quickly. We all know how fast our own computers wear out. 3 to 4 years, they're obsolete. Actually, they're obsolete when they're made and you buy it. The next one is already on the market, ready to go. So they have to replace these computers to be competitive. And to replace the amount of computers that they have is extremely, extremely expensive. It's not like a tractor that lasts 40 years. It's not like a piece of manufacturing equipment that lasts 10 to 15, 20 years. It's a delicate piece of equipment, and they just wear out or they become obsolete, and they have to be replaced to keep up with the industry. This subsidy is a subsidy, but it's a part of the negotiations with this company. The Leeds group gave me some information about the company. At first, I didn't believe it. They said it's a billion-dollar company moving here to southeast Wyoming or in Albany County. $1 billion. So I called them and said, that's a lot of money. And I thought it would be $100 million. I said, no, it's $1 billion. When they move here, that is $700,000 in property tax annually when they build their building. It's $1,350,000 in state and local taxes on electricity alone. They use 50 megawatts of electricity. There'll be close to 100 employees. That's probably 100 new houses, 100 new cars, 100 people shopping in our malls, 100 people buying food at the restaurants, in our grocery stores. There's the benefit. We may give a little bit, and like I said in the committee, you got to prime the pump to get the water. If you don't prime the pump with these kind of companies, you get nothing. And all we'll have is a bunch of prairie grass that's assessed at agricultural commercial property. If we give a little bit on these companies, we'll have a $50 million building, $100 million building there with all these assets coming in. And a lot of small companies feed off of these bigger companies. So we hopefully can bring smaller companies in as well. Will it benefit southeast Wyoming? Probably so, more than anybody else. Gillette's got a mine, Rock Springs has got a mine, they've got oil fields, Teton County's got the mountains. This is our asset. It's electricity, location, location, location. And we've got the assets, and we're going to have to give a little bit. We gave to the oil companies and the mining companies. I mean, there's exemptions out there for everybody. And this is just a small exemption, just on the equipment they buy, over $2 million. It's not for everything else that they're going to put into our community or into Wyoming. And they can. There might be other companies that will move to other smaller parts of the state if they're on a fiber optic line. There'll be a lot of companies, call companies like them. Casper got a big call company. I think it was one of the housing companies, Pella, something like that. So if they're on a fiber optic, that helps. And these kind of companies help everybody. Boulder was a small little college town, and before they got NCAR the first time, then IBM moved in, and other companies moved in, and then all these little offshoots started coming in. Now, they can keep their college students. They're a little weird for me. But we need those companies, and we need to diversify our economy, and I think this is the best way to get a start, even though we have to prime the pump a little bit. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was going to get up to speak also for the bill, but the last speaker, as a graduate of the University of Colorado at Boulder, I don't know that he was necessarily accurate in his description, although when I was a student there, we referred to the town as 5 square miles surrounded by reality. Mr. Chairman, this is a good bill, and it's not just for necessarily the southeast part of the state. They have their eyes on a particular firm at this time, but this is something that works anywhere in Wyoming. And among the other features that I think need to be emphasized for Wyoming and that helps Wyoming on something like this, it's the quality of the jobs, not just the job, not the number of jobs. We're not talking burger flippers or mushroom growers. We're talking high-paying green jobs, non-polluting jobs. We're also talking, to them, the attraction, in addition to what this would be, is the fact that Wyoming has relatively cheap power and available power. Because of where we are in the nature of our population, it's a secure area. It's secure from potential terrorism. We were something of a homogeneous population, and we're few. So somebody sticks out when they come to town. They're a stranger. And also, oddly enough, one of the things I found out is it's our climate. Our dry, cool climate is actually beneficial for this sort of thing, so they actually spend less on utilities. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to add that if these companies don't come, this doesn't cost us anything. If they do come, then we've got all these additional jobs. I think it's something, as far as the scales go, that's worth taking a chance on.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think a lot of what the good senator from Sheridan just said kind of makes my case why I'm against this bill. It also, where he graduated, probably explains a little bit of his odd behavior, but that's another story. What he just explained to you was why they would want to come to Wyoming. Cheap electricity. We are about retail. Now, I can't tell you what commercial rates are. I don't have that scale. But I can tell you that we're 5.7 cents a kilowatt hour. Our competitors, Texas, 10.9%, which I think was one of the states mentioned as a possible candidate for this group. Idaho would be the closest one to us at 5.7. Washington State, which has some of these data centers, in fact, they did pass this type of exemption because they lost one to Oregon. I don't think we compete for either of those against those two states for other obvious reasons, but they're 6.7 cents. So here you have the lowest operating state for this type of company in the whole United States. Rough estimates, given the size of this particular company, about $4 million a year in savings on electricity only for this company. If you're the CFO of this company, why aren't you putting that in there? Are you really worried about $500,000 or $600,000 or $800,000 or $900,000 a year in sales tax savings when your operating costs are going to drop by 4.3 compared to, what did I use in this, Washington State at 6.7 cents a kilowatt hour versus our 5.7? Why wouldn't you come here to begin with? What we're giving away is approximately another $800,000 would cost them additionally in Washington State. And the reason I used Washington State versus us was because they are very big in this particular industry. And so some articles were given out comparing why they passed their sales tax. Well, when you're compared to Oregon, which has great hydropower, they're fairly close on their kilowatt hours. So I use Washington State. So you got a $5.1 million savings a year just being located here. So why are we turning around and paying for them to come here? It reminds me of the car salesman that says, you know, he has the opportunity to say, how much do you want to pay a month? It's not that he's giving you a deal on the car, but he knows that's a good sales tool. You get a young couple in there or somebody that's on the edge of buying a car, you know, what kind of payment can you make? Sales tool. Is the customer getting the deal on that? No, but he's got a sales tool, and that's what this is. I understand it for an economic development group. It's a sales tool. But is it good for the state of Wyoming? Well, go to the bill. Number of employees. That will be established according to the size of the company that comes here. Well, that's no guarantee we're going to get any employees. You know, with our tax structure, it's best if they all live in Colorado and Nebraska, or there's only one manager out there and maybe a maintenance guy. Because the way our tax structure is, just bringing employees in without paying severance tax, federal mineral royalties, you have taken one of the two legs that holds our two-leg stool up and taken it out of there, and you're just going on sales tax. Well, they're going to pay us about, $1.2 million or something. I've heard as high as $1.3 million in sales tax a year. Well, that's great. They're going to pay $700,000 in property tax additional. Well, let's look at Laramie County. Their education, total taxes collected in Laramie County for education, and you're quite correct, Senator from Sheridan, he's quite correct in the fact that this could go to Sheridan, Casper, anywhere there's big fiber optic, good electricity. But since we are talking particularly about a company considering Laramie County, $45 million paid in this county, and I believe that was last year, total education. 10 or 12,000 students in this county, I think it amounts to about $3,800 a student. Add 100 jobs, add 700,000. Now, I wasn't sure if that was just property tax we were speaking of or total taxes paid. But if it's 700,000 in property tax, I'm not sure how you divide it. I'll even double it. Say that it'll be 1.4, they'll dump on top of education. So suddenly you have $46.5 million. Roughly $1,000 more you add. So this county is collecting about $5,000 in educational funds, and the ADM in this county is somewhere between $10,000 and $12,000, not counting transportation and disability or special ed and several other things. So they're $12,000-$13,000 a student. So is this an advantage to the state? I don't think so. That is just sales tax. You're going to give a good chunk of it back, but let's say here's the average per capita sales tax paid in Laramie County, $85 a year, sales tax, average per capita. Using 2000 census and 09 collections. So if the collections are there and you actually went to 2010 census and divided it, it'd be less than the $85. But we're giving a chunk of this money back. I just don't believe with a company like this that is only going to pay in the one leg of our stool, which is sales tax, and then we're going to turn around and give it back to them. And not only that, they need to be a large corporation. $5 million in the bill in capital investment, $2 million in equipment investment. Did you notice that they get to keep the money? I think the senator from KC mentioned that. They keep the money all year on sales tax that you and I pay monthly if you're in business. And then if they don't meet the threshold of $2 million, then they pay it no penalty or interest. It's a heck of a deal. Great sales tool to attract these companies, but we're in a state that has the best conditions for these companies. Let them come here without us buying their way here. I ask you to defeat the bill.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this has been a great debate, and I think good points have been made on both sides. And I think probably this is one of those issues that either you believe in incentives or you don't. and I think that we could spend considerable time, you know, talking about this. But I would just would say that, you know, if you believe in economic development, you're going to support this, and if you don't, you're probably not going to support it. But I think this is the game that we have to get into. If Wyoming truly wants to diversify its economy, but, you know, given the previous argument, it says to me that if we follow that, Wyoming's simply not open for business. You need to build a fence around it. We don't want your kids. They cost too much. And if you're not willing to pay your way in, we don't want you. And I don't think that's an appropriate argument. I think, you know, clear back of the tax 2010 years ago told us that however many legs we have on our tax stool, we need to build, we need to work, we need to diversify. Wyoming's got, I won't call it cheap, it's inexpensive electricity. We need to sell that. We need to have, we need white collar jobs. We need to build our rural areas, our smaller towns, our smaller communities, wherever we can plug in and we can find places to live. We can expand this business throughout our state. Having said that, I would ask your favorable support. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought after the next last speaker spoke, I was back in Teton County. Don't grow. Don't grow because it might cost us a little bit of services. Don't diversify the economy because we're going to have to pay a little bit. Do it. If this can happen, it's an excellent tool for the state of Wyoming. If we don't do it and they don't come, it hasn't cost us anything. It isn't like many of the other things we do where we give it up front. We've done it for a lot of things. NCAR, perfect example, $20 million, everything. If this does not come to Wyoming, it hasn't cost us anything. It is a subsidy. Make no mistake about it. It is to try to entice a company to come to this part of the state and spend $5 million. They have to spend $2 million in buying equipment. We're going to give them a tax exemption. A tax exemption is a subsidy. But if they're going to put in that much money, they are going to be giving jobs, they're going to be adding to the property tax, and everything else there. As our good majority floor leader said, if you don't believe in diversification, if you don't believe in encouraging companies to come to Wyoming through whatever tools we may have, then you should vote against it. But if you believe we need to grow, if you believe we do need to diversify, if you do believe we do need to try to create jobs for our kids to stay here, then you ought to vote for it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Larson, while you're up, would you like to address your Committee of the Whole amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I would. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 67 and ask that it be read in.
House Bill 67, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 2.
Mr. Chairman, I move that further reading of the amendment be dispensed with. What this does, folks, as you'll see in the original bill, it all the way through, it says qualifying equipment. In most sales tax exemptions that we have a definition of what is qualifying equipment. This looks awfully long, but basically it provides a definition of what qualifying computer equipment actually is. So that it isn't open-ended, so we're not giving an open-ended exemption to stuff that may or may not be there. That's all it does, is define, if you would, qualifying equipment. And I would ask your support.
Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, Senator Larson's motion on the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The amendment has passed. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I am pro-economic development. I believe very sincerely, and I know, and I've talked to this gentleman, I know he's pro-Wyoming, pro-economic development as well, but I believe very sincerely that we will grow Wyoming the best by having a stable tax structure that is both broadly applied and as low as possible. We have so many wonderful advantages in terms of tax structure. We are making a big mistake by running and doing these kind of subsidies, because what's really important is that our sales taxes are relatively low. They're broadly applied. They're a cornerstone of our taxation. We don't have a state income tax. And in the case of this particular industry, we have all the other geographic and electric and fiber optic advantages that are unequaled anywhere. You know, I don't blame corporations for trying to make a profit. But their first profit center when they're doing planning happens to be right at the end of Capitol Avenue in the state of Wyoming. And I'd probably do the same thing if I were in their boat. But to stand here on this floor and for anyone to criticize members who point out that that our tax subsidies have negative income implications, and in fact, yes, we do, that our education system is expensive, and on a per student basis, sometimes that can be a net loser, at least when you look at that, is not saying that anybody is against growing Wyoming or against the economic future of Wyoming, because I am for it as much as anybody in this room, and I know that that senator from Campbell County is as well.
Thank you. Any additional comments on the bill? Seeing none, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion on House Bill 67, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
House Bill 67 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Mr. President.
The Senate will be at ease for 10 minutes. Senate will come to order. We're getting some printing done and some distributions on some papers for the reason for the delay. We're at that order of concurrence. Senator Nicholas, are you ready on message number 212?
Yes, I am.
The reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 26th, 2010, from the House of Representatives, message number 212. Concurrence requested, Mr. President. Senate File 72, Wyoming Retirement Plan Contributions 2. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 37, noes 21, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message number 212 on Senate file number 72, the concurrence report, and ask you to vote no. This is an important bill. It's the Wyoming Retirement Plan that we've talked about at the bill. On the House side, they put a provision in, if you take a look at it, that requires that the employer pay shall pay no more than the 5.57% of the member's salary. What they were trying to get to was really school districts. Their concern was some districts would go out and pay the employee contribution for the employer. Let me re-say that. They were afraid that some districts would go out and pay for the employees' contributions. And as a practical matter, if a district chooses to do that, and we bar them from doing that from statute, they'll simply raise the salary by 1.44%. And so you can't prevent a district from increasing a salary and negating the impact of the bill. But what does happen is if you look at some of these smaller districts that try to compensate their employees through by giving them more retirement benefits, those folks would end up incurring more expenses because oftentimes employers will want to pay the employee share because they don't have to pay the FICA, Social Security, things like that. So that's you got your fire districts. Some of the smaller districts really would prefer to give their salary increases through the mechanism of paying for the additional employee share. So there are some unintended consequences. I've already talked to the folks on the other side. I don't think they recognize those issues. With respect to the school districts issue, that's going to be a recalibration discussion. But I'd urge you to vote no, and let's try to see if we can get that provision taken off and get the bill back to where we sent it over to them.
The motion is that the Senate do. Senator Cove.
Question. Now, the state retirement system, you got state employees, got school district employees that pay into it. We also have city employees that pay into it. We also have county employees that pay into it. Why wouldn't we try to go out and say the system has a lot of problems? All the participants in the state retirement system should help us get out of this problem.
Senator Nicholas.
Remember, there's 2.78% additional contribution that needs to be made. We said that with respect to the state and the state employees, we're going to pay half, the employee must have. The statute will provide that the employee is required to pick up half, and we've also specified for state employees that the employee has to pay their share. Now, for those other contributing entities, the school districts, that statute doesn't prohibit them from contributing the whole 2.78%. So the districts are left. I mean, what they're trying to do is say, look, if state employees have to contribute their 1.4%, so should the school districts. Well, now when you start going to cities, the school districts can choose to do it, and a lot of districts are obviously going to pass that employee share on to the employee. But we're not telling them by statute they have to. That's ultimately going to be a local decision. But when you start looking at some of those cities that are participating, but I'd really take a look at the special districts, the fire districts, a lot of those districts, the way they compensate their folks is through these retirement benefits, and they would in all likelihood prefer, some of them are going to prefer to, instead of giving salary increases, to pick up the additional employee contribution because it's less expensive. Part of the reason why the state of Wyoming began paying the employee contributions as salary increases years ago was because it was less expensive to the state, because you don't have to pay all of the FICA, Social Security taxes on it, so there was a cost savings. And if you're concerned about school districts, we might go, one of the results during the conference committee is to say, well, what applies to state employees is also going to apply to the school district employees, but there's no reason why we should tell the cities and the participating cities or the special districts what they're going to do with respect to their employee relationships. That ought to be defined by their own agreements, their payroll.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate file 72, and you've been asked to vote no. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Elliott?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt? Jennings,
no.
Johnson,
no.
Landon,
no.
Larson,
no.
Martin,
no.
Massey,
no.
Meyer,
no.
Meyer-S,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Schiffer,
no.
Scott,
no.
Sessions,
no.
Townsend,
no.
Von Platern,
no.
President Hines.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 noes.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 72. The conference committee will be Nicholas, Chairman, Massey, and Cole. Reports from standing committees.
February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 79, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 97, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 106, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 72, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 59, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye. Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 94, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye. Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman. Your committee number 2 on appropriations revealed House Bill 1 pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1E, 1 and 2. The following lists are provided. I'm dispensing with the reading, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
In accordance with Joint Rule 14-1F1, House Bill 1 is referred directly to third reading. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. The bills that were just read in, House Bills 79, 97, 106, and 72, have either an appropriation or direct effect on the budget, and I ask that they be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Senator, would you give me that list again? I didn't catch them all.
Number 79, number 97, number 106, and number 72.
Thank you. Without objections, House Bill 79, 97, 106, and 72 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2. Third reading of House Bill 1. House Bill 1, third reading of the bill.
On. Do I read that, Mr. Bloomer? House Bill 1, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, General Government Appropriations, an act to make appropriations for the biennium commencing July 1, 2010 and ending June 30, 2012. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the concurrence report for Senate file, or for House Bill 1. Ladies and gentlemen, with respect to the concurrence report, there's provision in the rules for straw polling. We'll dispense with the straw polling and simply explain the amendments and then move for the adoption. And, Mr. President, do you want to have the amendments explained now?
Yes.
Okay.
Please.
You have, ladies and gentlemen, in front of you a couple of documents that are with the package that have the amendments. The thick package are the actual copies of the identical and non-identical amendments. That's really for your reading over the weekend, if you'd like, or you can refer to the actual text. There are two documents that we'll be working off of. The first document is titled Reconciliation Between the House and Senate Positions Profile, and then we'll be looking at the cheat sheet, which is the 8.5 by 14-inch document. Let's start with the profile positions. What these do, this document does, is explain the differences in the financial impact of the House version versus the Senate version. For all practical purposes, even though the dollar amounts may seem kind of large, in the total picture, they're pretty small. If you take a look at the top box on the House position ending, now this is the general fund, the budget reserve account. And where you see the differences in the Legislative Stabilization Reserve Account, the LSRA balance on February 26, 2010. So if you look at our golden rods on the front and you look at the amounts, these are the differences. The House spent more money, of course, than the Senate. The changes are principally this. The House adopted a provision to increase the funding to the DD program by an additional 4% or 5%. You recall that the JAC there was a 10% cut made by the governor. The JAC returned 5%. The House returned an additional 5%. You've also heard a description that there may have been a bigger impact of DD programs because of the Navigant study and how that impacted them. But the point being that they added another $4.1 million. The House added $149,000 to Judicial District 9C. That's in the Pinedale, Judge Tyler's office. They added a law clerk. That's a law clerk that was turned down by the Appropriations Committee. The House also appropriated $10,000 for the printing and distribution of state constitutions. The issue with respect to the governor's office, telehealth, that's actually a provision that we had. In our provision, we took the money out of the governor's contingency account. The House actually added cash for that. The local government distributions, the House added an additional $10 million to the JAC position. They took it out of the general fund and simply put it into the formula that we'll be talking. They did make some formula changes that we'll talk about here in a moment. The correction sex offender program, that was a $200,000 hit to our program. That's the good representative that actually caused us a deficit and almost busted our budget. But we'll get over it. But I don't know when. With respect to the liquor warehouse, you'll recall that the House position was to take the $12 million for the liquor warehouse out of the budget reserve account. That was the Senate, excuse me. The House actually left. They also took the repayment obligation off, but left the money in taken out of the capital complex restoration account. Now, so that added, we lost $12 million there, but we also picked up $12 million because we removed the retirement reserve in the auditor's office, and we're dependent upon the Senate File 72 that we were just appointed a conference to take care of that. Because the governor's original profile that was adopted by the JAC had $12 million additional profiled out of the general fund, when we took out that appropriation, there was a $12 million hit to it, so it offset the two amounts. So you can see that the LSRA ending balance for the House is $704,000 on the top, and ours is $718,000. Down below on the school foundation program, you can once again see the profiles. The House deleted the Hathaway Longitudinal Study Program. That gave them a positive $270,000. The House created a $15,000 additional payment to one district for blind school program in this district of the sponsor. And then below that, on the school transportation, you'll recall that we put in the provision that transportation would not be reimbursed at levels higher than the 2009-2010 budget. The $6.3 million is the financial impact of that amendment. The way that was calculated is simply going back and looking at what our LSO staff had projected as an increase to transportation in this biennium. So that was the projected increase that they had made, and they essentially took off the projected interest increase. So that would reduce the payments out of the foundation account, thereby increasing our profile over theirs. On the school capital construction count, I think by now you know that the House adopted the governor's position, which spent an extra $52 million. And they also eliminated some flex that we had provided at the JAC level in the component projects of about $1 million. So the net for them is about just under a little over $50 million difference. So that's the fiscal impacts. If you go through the goldenrod, you'll be able to see those fiscal impacts of the different positions on the House and the Senate. That takes us to the cheat sheet. We'll go through it pretty quickly. The cheat sheet being the 8.5 by 14-inch document. And the way this is organized is that if you look on the amendments, on the numbers of the amendments, they're in order as they are in the package that you have in front of you. So if you wanted to go find the amendment and look specifically at the language, you would look in the same order as they're reflected on the cheat sheet. All right, the identical amendments we'll go through quickly. You should remember all of them. We had an identical amendment. Both parties agreed on creating a select committee on developmental programs. Now, in the House, it gets a little bit confusing because they would put in a program, they take out a program, and they put it back in. So sometimes you'll see multiple amendments for them to get to what took us one reading. On the CIO, both parties agreed that we would decrease the general fund appropriation for the CIO, increase the general fund appropriations for, this is essentially the cowboy marketing campaign. Both houses agreed to the cowboy marketing program. The next item is the records analyst position for the cancer program division, which was cut by the JAC. Both houses, put that back in the Division of Aging. On the School Facilities Commission reorganization study, both houses agreed to that language. Recall that's what puts the Facilities Commission back in the executive office, or the executive branch, and provides a homework assignment for the select committee to take a look at its organizational structure. With respect to the law office, this is the amendment that the JAC had put on it to put the attorneys who was doing the litigation support for the AG, put his salary back onto the regular schedule. That was removed by both the, both houses. On the next item is the child care facilities care facility study. The footnote that was the same on both houses. On the school capital construction, both houses did a cleanup message. You know, I'm going to skip through some of these because you can read them as well as I can. The teacher shortage loan program, that was the same on both houses. The NCAR MOU cleanup, same on both houses. Select Committee on Developmental Disabilities, that's the interim committee to look at it. That was the same on both houses. The School Facilities Commission reorganization study ended up being the same on both houses. The statewide video conferencing, adding language regarding the sealed bidding process, ended up on both houses. Distance learning ended up being identical on both houses, requiring the competitive bid, sealed bid process on both houses. Water quality, the footnote requiring the department to allocate resources to take a look at the pesticide issue, same on both houses. Now we get into the non-identical amendments that are either have small parts that are different or substantial parts different depending on the provisions. If you look at the first one on House Second Reading Amendment number 1, that is the I love, this is classic. The House added a footnote to implement the funding for the Wyoming Public Finance website into the ITD office. The ITD office has no general funds, and it's the wrong office. So the reason it's $0 is because there's no general funds. It couldn't implement it. So I guess they can have that if they like it. the wrong department and no general fund to take. If they wanted to do it, they needed to take it out of the CIO's office, who does have general funds, but they specified the wrong office, the wrong place, no funding. Healthcare financing, this is the $4.1 million for the developmental disability program that I've talked about. House second reading number six, this is the father factor program. We've got when our good Cheyenne representative just turned it over to his brother to make sure he gets it on both sides. That's a sort of the double whammy. You don't get it here, you get it on the other side. The next item is the $149,000. Again, that's for Judge Tyler's law clerk up in Pinedale that the JAC determined was not appropriate given the caseload, but we'll be talking about it. The next item is the AML funding. The House put in a provision to require that the CO2 sequestration research and demonstration projects that they report to the Ag Committee, and I think they were principally concerned about taking a look at the water discharge. Not sure, but I suppose you can get that report just by asking for it. On the school capital construction, there's the $51 million that you're seeing on House Second Reading Amendment number 9. Modified by House Second Reading number 42. You go below that, you see the $10 million for school capital construction. Here's an interesting provision. The House put in a provision to allow the governor, if he thinks there is an anticipated emergency, to go into one of the SPRAW accounts to get money out. So I guess now you give the governor authority to go into the SPRAW accounts, which is we ordinarily don't give the governor authority and doesn't have authority to get into our various accounts. Now, if you wanted to take $10 million out and put it in the auditor's office and say it's available to you, but we've got a couple areas where the House did some pretty interesting things. I think they forgot the difference or the constitutional distinction between what this executive branch does and what we do. Below that, there was the amendment that deleted the distance education, but it got put back in. So that's one of the ones you can almost ignore that because it comes back in later. Then you got the general fund programs, the $270,000 for deleting for the Hathaway longitudinal study. Below that on the insurance group, that's an amendment that we rejected here. You'll recall there was an amendment over here to increase the state employees' deductible to a minimum of $500 from the $360 that's allowed presently. That was adopted on the House side. The next item is a reappropriation of $150,000 to retain independent audit expertise for the School Facility Commission post-audit. What they had in mind there to do is to require an entire audit of the School Facilities Commission to go back and look at where the monies went, how was it being applied, and to make sure all the dollars are there. The bottom one is Victim Services Division. You can ignore that because that you recall is the algorithm that's provided by the duplication counts. And the federal government said you can't be using that algorithm even because that's supplying victim information. The House first deleted that, and then somebody told them, hey, you can't do it, so then they put it back on. Over on the top of the second page, $15,000, that is for the a program, summer schools for the blind that would apply to one county. And the next amendment is the Rex Liquor House. Now, what they did again is they stripped off the footnote, but left the funding in the capital construction renovation account. We determined that if you're going to take away the reimbursement obligation, then you ought to just take it out of the budget reserve. So we'll be talking about that. The next one is the health care financing, House Second Reading Number 50. They did adopt and approve the provision allowing the governor to expend funds for the reimbursement to the Children's Hospital in Denver. So that failed here, made it on their side. With respect to the next one is, but the next one is the Byrd Amendment, the Amendment $10,000 for the Wyoming Constitution for distribution. The next one on the local governments, you'll see the $10 million appropriated to the general fund for direct allocation to the locals. Now, with respect to allocations, the House did adopt the redistribution, so there would be two-thirds to the city and only one-third to the counties. You recall that the Senate debated that and rejected that concept. Below that is the footnote requiring YDOT to, I love this. The first thing that the sponsor of this amendment did is said, we need to get YDOT reporting on the same fiscal year as the state government. Well, then somebody pointed out to them the reason they YDOT does their accounting on the federal fiscal year is because they're federal funds. So, not to be outdone, they came, you'll see down below, they decided to change the date, but require the YDOT supply to the Transportation Committee their commission side budget. I thought you were already doing that, but apparently you're now required by statute to do that, which you've already been doing for 100 years. Interesting. So, that's the YDOT amendment. The $85,000 for the epilepsy, well, let's go back up. I think I skipped over. We were, we did the algorithm. We did the, on the AML funding, they put in provision there to require that any project assets it could be accounted separately and sold. So I assume that if we put in a $45 million hole in the ground, that if we sell that hole in the well in the ground, we got to make sure the funds come back to the state. But we'll take a look at that. I mean, there may be some validity to that. With respect to the Estray footnote, you'll recall that's the reimbursement. The sponsor of that amendment simply wanted to clarify that the definition of Estray's footnotes to include animals impounded by the board. Below that is the $85,000 tobacco funds that to support the epilepsy program. That was an amendment that twice failed over here but got on the House side. The next one is a footnote to provide that the 20% of the, well, you'll recall this was the an amendment that came on this side to allow Sweetwater County specifically to borrow money that from the Foundation Guarantee Program to help offset their losses. The amendment that failed here passed on the House. The next item deletes the budget footnote formatting. That's the YDOT correction amendment that I just described, where the gentleman making that motion put YDOT's budget back on the federal calendar year. School refinance calibration. They added they've got a little bit different language, and frankly, you're going to have to look at their language versus ours. And what I might do, if Senator Massey, if you would just summarize, but the difference is the pause, teachers, and the effectiveness. If you want a better explanation, we can provide a more extensive explanation, but there are just a few differences in their language versus ours for the recalibration effort. AML funding, the next one is the dynamic compaction. Their dynamic compaction language is a little bit different than ours, so we'll have to reconcile the two. The special contingency fund, again, we've got a difference between how we funded the telehealth program. They funded it out of general fund. We funded it out of the governor's contingency account. The last ones are just corrective amendments that our staff picked up, and since the staff was on the House side of the time, they threw the amendment out on the House and it got adopted. Mr. President, that explains the differences. We don't see any purpose for a straw poll vote. I move the conference report. If there are any questions, we'd be happy to answer questions.
Questions from the Senate. Any further discussion? There being no further discussion on House Bill 1, in accordance with Joint Rule 14-1G and Joint Rule 14-1H 1 and 2, House Bill 1 is referred directly to a conference committee of 5 members from each House to meet to resolve the differences between the Houses with respect to both budget bills, Senate File 1 and House Bill 1. The conference committee will be Senator Nicholas, Chairman, Massey, C. Myers, Peterson, and Townsend. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the Appropriations Committee will meet now up in S-14 to consider House Bill 79, Eminent Domain Wind Power Collection Lines, House Bill 97, Nuclear Energy Protection Study, House Bill 106, Small Business Investment Credit, House Bill 72, Regulation of Wind Energy Facilities, and House Bill 11, Cancer Control Act Amendment. Mr. Chairman, these are all, or Mr. President, these are all re-referrals.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. So we all are on the same page. We will in a moment resolve ourselves back into the Committee of the Whole. While we're in the Committee of the Whole, allow the Appropriations Committee the necessary time to work the re-referrals, which need to come back to be read in today in order for us to have them on the general file for Monday. So having said that, Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Von Pledren. Forget all my right papers.
It's drawing.
Committee of the Whole will come to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill 17. Would the reading clerk please read it in?
House Bill 17, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. Carbon sequestration, financial assurance, and regulation, and act relating to environmental quality. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, S. Meyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, C. Meyer, Nicholas Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Ross. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 17, Carbon Sequestration, Financial Assurances, and Regulations. For an explanation of the bill, I will yield the floor to the good senator from Uinta County.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to use the talking notes from the good representative from Campbell County, who has done extensive work on the carbon sequestration issue. So to start with, House Bill 17 is the sixth bill in the series of bills setting up the legal infrastructure for carbon sequestration activities. House Bill 80 2 years ago left a placeholder. The person sequestering the carbon dioxide must put up adequate financial assurances. The second thing the bill did was to put together a study group to study the risks of carbon sequestration and the need for adequate financial assurances. The study group put together a marvelous report which details the risks of carbon sequestration and the type and nature of financial assurances required to conduct CCS activities in Wyoming. This bill does the following. On the bottom of page 1, page 2, and part of page 3, it creates a fund for monitoring of carbon sequestration activities. The account does not accept liability, but does make the monitoring activities of the DEQ revenue neutral. The bottom of page 3 begins the requirements for financial assurances for carbon sequestration permits. We remove the placeholder and insert specific requirements for financial assurances. We allow the DEQ to set regulations for the financial assurances. On page 4, O provides for requirements of liability insurance. Page 4, Romanet 6A, procedures for establishing the type and amount of bond of financial assurances. Are there any questions so far? Is there anything you'd like to go into more detail as I read these? Part B is reporting requirements for the permittee on the bond. Part C, proof of compliance on the bond, including permit suspension or termination procedures. Part D, procedures for replacement of a bond. Part E, procedures for forfeiture of the bond. Part F, procedures for public notice and hearing for release of the bond after 10 years after the injection has ceased and after 3 years of continuous monitoring. Part G, recording the affidavit in the office of the county clerk that CCCS activities occurred under a piece of land. The Romanets might be a little bit different because I believe this was to the original bill and not to the engrossed copy. So this is Romanet 7 on the bottom of page 7. Include requirements for fees to be paid to the fund to cover the costs of monitoring. And as you know, the bill contains an appropriation for an additional financial analyst to analyze the terms and condition of the financial assurances. And the House amendment reclassifies a vacant computer support person position to the financial analyst position, so there is no increase in state employees' FTEs. This provides the information that we were given on the bill, and if there are any questions, I will do my best to answer them, and if not, I'll ask for any help from any of the members of the committee.
Further discussion on the bill? Question. Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the committee of the whole rises report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 17, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 17 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 23. Will the clerk please read it in?
House Bill 23, sponsored by Representative Brown, Business Entities Reinstatement Fees, an act relating to business entities. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when a committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 23. Mr. Chairman, I would yield to the co-sponsor of the bill, Senator Scott. This is business entities fees, and he's a co-sponsor. He'll be happy to explain the bill.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is it goes into the existing statutes and deals with the penalties and fees when you don't get your corporate annual report in on time and don't pay the required tax. Best understood, if you look at the situation with regard to business corporations, starting at the bottom of page 3, What happens if you don't pay these by the due date? You get administratively dissolved. If you don't, they have to send you a notice that you're going to get administratively dissolved. And then you've got 60 days to pay or and get that report in, or you are administratively dissolved. And then when you want to come back in, you have to pay right now, if you look at the bottom of page 3, a sum equal to double the amount of fees and taxes then delinquent, and a reinstatement certificate fee, and that is $250, I believe. So you, no, it's $50 for the corporation. So you're getting hit twice. The typical Ma and Pa corporation, the annual tax is $50, and the fee is $50. And it was felt that was punitive, especially now the only notice you get is after you've missed the first deadline. And we do have a problem with people just simply not getting and reacting, understanding what the notice is. And so the feeling was that this was punitive and we'd be better off just with the fee, which is in this case $50, that's sufficient motivation to get people to actually do it. And it's surprising the number of people. We even had an attorney said they'd let their professional corporation lapse once. It does happen. These things come at you once a year and they go through the cracks sometimes. So that's what the bill does, Mr. Chairman. It does it for all the various business entities. We have very similar provisions for all of them. That's the long and the short of the bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions on it.
Further discussion on the bill. There is a committee of the whole amendment. Would you like that read in at this time? Please read it in.
House Bill 23, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Mr. Chairman, all this Committee of the Whole Amendment is a conforming amendment because it conforms to the bill regarding limited liability companies that was Senate File 18 and makes them match up without damaging the substance of either bill. So what it would do is say, if 2010 Senate File 18 is enacted into law, the part in this instant bill, which is on page 2, it's really the only amendment on page 2, is line 23, shall not be effective. And that's because it's in the other bill, Mr. Chairman. They have put it in the other bill. With that being said, Mr. Chairman, there's a little bit of a hiccup happening on the they don't do as good as worked up back there as we do here. And there is some question about whether that limited liability company bill is going to continue at all or continue in its present form. So with that, I'm going to wait till third reading to actually make this conforming change. But I had the opportunity to talk about it to bring it today. So, Mr. Chairman, with your permission and the permission of the Senate, I'll withdraw this amendment, but reminding the body that you might see it on third reading if things are still working out. And it's only a conforming amendment.
Without objection, Committee of the Whole Number 1, House Bill 23 is withdrawn. We're back on the bill. Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 23, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 23 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 29.
House Bill 29, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, Taxation of Specified Digital Products, an Act Relating to Excise Taxes. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Larson, Perkins, Schiffer. No, Senator Case, Senator Martin, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I move it do so with a favorable motion on House Bill 29, Taxation of Specified Digital Products. Mr. Chairman, what this does, again, this is part of the streamlined sales tax agreement. It's trying to hold us into compliance with that agreement. In essence, what it says is for these electrical products, if you get permanent possession, then we'll tax them. If you do not get permanent, if you only get temporary, then they won't be taxed. And that's the essence of the bill. If you go over on the top of page 2, that's where they talk about the sales price of a specified digital product. If the purchaser has permanent use, and that, in essence, is the bill. It goes on. Obviously, we go into the sales tax is one side. The use tax is the other. And Mr. Chairman, that is the bill. That's what it's all about. Okay, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
No discussion on the bill. There is a standing committee, number one. Would you like to move have that read in at this moment? Clerk, please read it in.
House Bill 29, Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 5.
Senator Shipp.
Mr. Chairman, I've moved the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 29. What this does, the words were in the original draft on page 2, lines 5 and 6, possession and control. Those words actually are not in that agreement, so we took them out, and it cleans it up. I think it makes it much more delightful to read without those in there. It now reads permanent use of the specified digital product. If that's not classic English, I don't know what is. I urge the adoption of this amendment.
Any discussion? You ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole shall adopt Standing Committee number 1 to House Bill 29, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee 1 has passed. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill?
Question.
Seeing none, are all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 29, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 29 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 69.
House Bill 69, sponsored by Representative Illoway, Secretary of State Directives Authority, an act relating to elections. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 69, Secretary of State Directives Authority. I can't remember if we assigned this one to a committee member. We did. We assigned it to the very competent committee member from Laramie County.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the way of background on this bill, in late October, Congress passed the Military and Overseas Voter Empowerment Act. It's called MOVE, which makes changes in the requirements for states in accommodating military and overseas citizens who are absent from their voting jurisdiction. The President signed it into law on October 2009, and the MOVE Act became effective November 1, 2010, and I would say November 1, 2009, and then beyond for future federal elections. The Secretary of State has been working with a group of county clerks to develop a process to best implement the MOVE Act in Wyoming for the 2010 general election in order to accommodate these military and overseas citizens. Because the short time frame to change statutes and because the election process for the 2010 election is already underway, the Secretary of State's office is asking right now for rulemaking authority and the authority to issue directives to the county election officials in order to comply with the MOVE Act for the upcoming election. They will then ask for an interim study to make the necessary statute changes to ensure compliance with the Act for all future federal elections. The MOVE Act requires states to first make available and transmit voter registration applications and absentee ballot applications electronically, develop procedures for transmitting blank ballots to those voters electronically for federal elections. Their voters will still have to mail their marked ballots back to the county clerk. Have a ballot tracking mechanism, which actually most states have now with their voter registration management systems. Make the absentee ballots available to transmit to these voters at least 45 days prior to the election instead of 40 days, which our current statutes require. There are about 23 states and two territories which have those late primaries like Wyoming, and this law is in effect for the 2010 elections. And as Wyoming, most of the states cannot change their laws in time to meet the deadline. So, Mr. Chairman, I would ask for the election office and our Secretary of State's office and for our county clerks, would you please vote in favor of this bill so that we can have an election that's legal at the federal level.
Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 69, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 69 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 70.
House Bill 70, sponsored by Representative Pedersen, Vacant Land, an Act relating to taxation and revenue. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 70, Vacant Land. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does, it goes in on vacant land within a platted subdivision, and directs the county assessor to consider the value of the property through the use of present worth appraisal methodology upon the request of the property owner. What that involves is if you've got a developed subdivision, it's all platted, and you've laid out, I don't know what, I'll just use, say, 100 of these little lots, and if you've sold one of them, or two of them, or very few of them. Right now, some appraisers are valuing all of the remaining lots at the value that the first one sold for. What this does is when you come in and use the present worth appraisal methodology, it means you average that out over the lifespan of the sales of those subdivision lots. What, in fact, it does is it makes it possible, even in a down market like we're in, for a subdivision developer to not have those extraordinary high costs up front and average the tax averaged out over the life of the sale of the lots in that subdivision. Other states have done it. Colorado has done it for years. That's kind of what this is modeled on. It does make it so it's possible to lay out a rather large subdivision and not have it prohibitively expensive up front in terms of the subdivider waiting in. When the market cools down, you don't move many of them, and then the market comes back and you'll move more. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any question? Any discussion on the bill? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the information of the body, I'm involved in this business. However, I think I'm a class of persons and plan on voting.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question with regard to a specialized circumstance that we're starting to see, and I expect we'll hope we'll see more of, and that is where you've got a cluster-type development, where you have a number of lots, and then a core area, or maybe it's not a core area, but an area that is intended to remain agricultural. Is that land that's planned to remain agricultural, is that considered vacant land? Is that affected by this bill, or is it still taxed as agricultural? What's the circumstance? I know there's a good-sized one up in Johnson County I'm aware of, and I think they're probably spreading to other places in the state.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, in the case of those cluster developments, where the clusters are, where it's a platted subdivision, this would apply if the property owner asked for it. Land that is not in a platted subdivision, in other words, it hasn't been subdivided, this would not apply. It is only in platted subdivision, and I refer you to page 1, line 15. It's got to be in a platted subdivision.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, quite ready for the question? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, this is not a tax break. It's not an exemption. It's really good policy. Because what you have a situation is where the market's telling you that, you know, you got this big development, and you might be able to sell one or two lots this year, or maybe one or two lots a month, and maybe there's a lot of them. But you can't sell the entire value of the subdivision for that. There is no market. The market value does not exist for that entirety. This allows assessors to recognize that the market doesn't exist for that in entirety. And it's great because as you bring the lots on the line, yes, they'll be valued appropriately. But in the meantime, it's kind of valued for what the whole thing would be like if you had to dump it on the market. And it's, so it's fair, and it could apply to profit, for-profit developers. It could apply to non-profit economic development folks that are building and developing business parks. This is a very good bill. It's the spirit of our Constitution and based on market values for valuing property for tax purposes.
Further discussion? Seeing none, question. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 70, please say aye. Opposed, no. House Bill 70 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 88.
House Bill 88, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, Public Retirement Plans Qualified Plan Status, an act relating to public retirement plans. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Heard the motion. Senator Nicholas is not present at the moment. He is coming down. Would anybody like to speak to 88? Would somebody like to move 88? Senator Meyer.
I move 88. House Bill 88. Mr. Chairman, I move that when a committee of the whole rise report to do so, if it do pass motion on House Bill 88, Public Retirement Plans Qualified Plan Status. Mr. Chairman, basically this is just a bill that the... I would call it a reviser bill for the retirement plan system. It goes in a few places here and talks about conformance with the Internal Revenue Code, and those are some things that we had to do to get in compliance with some of our 457 plans and our other plans. It defines the rollover contribution, and that's to comply with the IRS. We head over and do some more authorizations on our service credits, and as the body may remember, those are anybody can buy up to 5 years worth of service credits after, I believe it's after they've been employed for, I think it's for 6 to 7 years. Then we have some more things
doing with the Employment Act over on page 5. And we get back into the service retirement benefits for the other plans. And it just goes through and does pretty much the same thing for the different plans as far as your different firefighter plans and your law enforcement plans and your 457 plans and the different plans that the board administers. And if you need any details, we'll get right into the details. But basically, it's basically just more or less a revisor's bill.
Discussion on House Bill 88. Seeing none, you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 88, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 88 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 90.
House Bill 90, sponsored by Representative Gingery, Insurance Service Contracts, an act relating to insurance. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, and Johnson. Excuse, Senator Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 90. Mr. Chairman, this passed out of the Corporations Committee. It's a nice white bill. The co-sponsor, Senator Perkins, is here, and I can also help with the bill if you wish, Senator Perkins.
Senator Perkins.
And let this be a lesson to anyone that no good deed goes unpunished. As I went down to talk with the good chairman of the House Judiciary Committee and ended up as a co-sponsor on this bill. In any event, what this is actually a little bit of a deregulation bill. Currently, service contracts are included under the as an insurance contract under our code, and as such would require a lot of financial surety and other things to go along with that in order for them to be an insurance contract. And this bill actually takes that and removes some of that obligation and removes the requirement that it actually be an insurance company and have the bonds and have the reserves and things to take care of a number of things. And the reason why that's not particularly important is if you understand what insurance what these service contracts are. What they are, and so what this bill does is exempt from treating them as insurance contracts, are these different kinds of little service contracts you buy when you buy your car, you buy a set of tires, or something along the lines of that. So what you see on page 2 on lines 13 through 17, you see you're talking about when you buy a new car that you can get your dings removed or certain things done there, and that's part of oftentimes provided either gratis or for a fee when you buy your car. Number 2 is your hazard tire warranty that you get. So this isn't when your tire wears out or a warranty. It's like if you pay a few extra dollars and you're driving down and you hit the curb and smash your tire or break your sidewall, that they'll replace the tire for you. See there on 3, when you go to page 3, it's repair of this windshield. If you get a nick or something in your windshield, they can come and fix that for you, some things like that. Ultimately, what these are typically offered by local businesses. A lot of times change. You have to come back into the store and they'll do that for you, or a related store in a different town or state. Ultimately, as I understand it, insurance department has no problems with this. I think this is appropriate legislation. It's basically deregulates and allows these business owners to go out and offer those service contracts and for you to have advantage of that without having to go through the insurance and bonding requirements that insurance companies are required to have. And with that explanation, I'll stand for questions that hopefully Senator Case can answer, excuse me, the good senator from Fremont can answer, and other than that, I ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Senator Perkins, there is an amendment, your committee, the whole amount. Would you like to read that?
Oh, yes, thank you. I forgot about that.
Mr. Clerk, read it in first.
House Bill 90, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 23.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This one changes the entire nature of the bill.
Would you move it, Senator Perkins?
Yes, I'd be delighted to move it. Mr. Chairman, I hereby move House Bill Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 90. I ask for your favorable consideration on it. This one simply, there was a typo in there. It was said contact, and it should have said contract. And so I'd ask for your favorable consideration, or I'll stand for questions on this particular amendment.
And that was the Committee of the Whole Number 1 that you moved. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Ferguson. Any discussion on the amendment? If seeing none, All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 90, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The amendment has passed. We're on the bill. Question on the bill being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 90, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 90 has passed the Committee of the Whole. And Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I move that the Committee of the Whole be at ease till the sound of the gavel, please.
Committee of the Whole, sound of the gavel. Oh, the gravel or the...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Reports from standing committees? No? No. Oh, excuse me. I was getting in a hurry. Reading clerk to read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 102, do pass amended. House Joint Resolution 2, do pass amended. House Bill 63, do pass amended. House Joint Resolution 4, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. House Bill 57, do pass amended. House Bill 60, do pass. House Bill 93, do pass. House Bill 67, do pass amended. House Bill 17, do pass. House Bill 23, do pass. House Bill 29, do pass amended. House Bill 69, do pass. House Bill 70, do pass. House Bill 88, do pass. House Bill 90, do pass amended. Senator Von Platern, Chairman.
Senator Von Platern.
Mr. President, I move the acceptance of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Messages from the House.
February the 26th, 2010, from the House of Representatives. Message number 213, Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing a bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 6, Improvement and Service Districts. Ayes 11, noes 47, excused 2. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 26th, 2010, from the House of Representatives, message number 214. Conferees appointed. Joint Conference Committee Number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with Alike Committee Number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 1. The House conferees are Representatives Berger, Chairman, Representatives Buchanan, Cohey, Hammonds, and Peterson. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 11, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 26th, 2006, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 72, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 26th, 2006, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 79, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Nicholas, and Peterson. No, Senators Meyer and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 22nd, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 97, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend. No, Senator Massey, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 26th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriation, to whom was referred House Bill 106, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. No, Senator Meyer, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 9 a.m. on, excuse me, on Monday morning.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet with our counterparts from the House at noon recess on Monday. Committee members note the different time, noon recess on Monday, in the House committee room to discuss joint interim topics.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet at 8 a.m. in S1 to consider interim topics, and then we will meet jointly with the House committee in room H8 upon adjournment on Monday to consider interim topics.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your travel committee number 6 will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. in room H10 down at the other end of the Capitol with the House TRW committee to discuss interim topics.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your revenue committee will meet Monday, March 1st, 2010 at 8 a.m. in room H11 with our counterparts from the House to discuss interim topics.
Senator Von Platerman.
Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs, will meet at noon in RSF13, our room, to discuss interim topics with the House. Members do not need to be there. I just need that their suggestions be sent to me by then.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet with the Light Committee from the House on Monday morning at 8 o'clock at room S19 to discuss interim topics. Thank you.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet Monday, March the 1st, 2010, at 8 a.m. in room S18 to discuss interim topics. And further, Mr. Chairman, your committee number 9 will also meet 15 minutes after the noon recess in room 302 with a light committee from the House to discuss interim topics.
You've heard the motion that the Senate shall stand adjourned until 9 a.m. Monday, March 1st. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.